Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Okay, so today we have John Papa, senior technical evangelist and all-around cool guy, joining us. John? Oh, yeah, I told John we needed silence to begin the show, so he's just going to stay silent through the whole show. Thank you, John.
May I speak now, Jesse?
Yeah, you may speak now, sir. Nice, very nice. So, John, you have been, in many ways, everybody's mentor on all things data and on MVVM. And the thing those two things have in common is that when you cut past the syntax, you get to patterns. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
So what are you finding these days after working with it for a long while that you're spending most of your time thinking about and doing and finding most useful?
I think it's funny to look at the patterns and where things come from. And I got an MVVM because I was an MVP guy, Metal View presenter, for a while. And then when WPF and Silverlight came out, it just seemed more natural to go to more of a binding type model. It was really the biggest difference for me between those two patterns, because the bindings in XAML are, as you know, are just key to everything. So MVVM is one of those things that's very, it's almost religious, like every other topic that developers get into. People have certain ways they want to do it. And some people feel MVVM is actually the command.
I try not to get religious about anything except bracing. Right? You have your braces the way I like them, or you're wrong. But I'm willing to be open on other things.
You know, it's one of those things that it's. I tend to be a little more loose on patterns, in that if you follow the spirit of the pattern and what you're trying to accomplish, and you stick with a consistent pattern. I mean, the point of the patterns generally to keep consistency, to keep maintainability, and to accomplish some things. Like maybe unit testing is one of your goals, maybe extensibility, maybe scalability. You got to pick one of those abilities or a couple of them, and kind of keep that in mind. It's not about being the perfect pattern and doing it the exact way. Because you're going to find if you get 10 developers in a room, you're going to have 10 ways or more of doing something. So
let me back you up for a second. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but let me back you up because you said a couple interesting things. So you said you started out in MVC and you moved to MVVM around the binding. So two thoughts occurred to me right away when you say that. One is my understanding is that MVVM literally grew out of MVC specifically because of the binding, that as WPF was being developed and Silverlight was being developed and they were doing data binding, they looked at MVC, then they looked at Martin Fowler's Model View presenter, MVP, and said, well, this is a really good fit, except we've got this binding that really can help determine an answer to that age-old question of, well, how much should the controller do, right? And so then the, in my mind, unfortunately named View Model class was view model layer, I guess it is, was created, which is essentially the presenter, is essentially the controller, except that it's doing all of its work by way of binding. And I guess we should explain, but what we mean by that is that because there is data binding between the data level, that is the model, and the view, and so when you have a control, you can data bind that to whatever data you're wanting to present to the user. The question is, what happens when the user takes an action? How do you update that view? How do you tell the view what to do? No one can see that you're nodding along with me, but yes, I think we're in agreement on this, right? Vigorous nodding, that's much better. And the question when I was doing MVC back in old, early Macintosh days was, well, how much intelligence is in the controller and how much is in the view? And we like to say that, well, none of the intelligence, none of the code is in the view. It's all in the view model. But the truth is, there's a tremendous amount of code in the view. It's just all code that's been written for you by Microsoft. And most of your code, that is the programmer's code, not John's code, but most of the programmer's code, is in the view model. Would you buy that as a first approximation of how this works?
I think so. I think there's a lot of, you know, looking at where you come from and why you'd want to use this pattern is probably a good start. You know, and if you look at what I try to do is I show people, if you were using MVP or MVC or forget any patterns at all, let's just say you created a code behind, you're trying to load data into a screen. The way you generally would do that if you didn't know anything about these bindings or MVVM patterns is you would have data, that you, as you mentioned, and you'd have to pull it and push it into a screen to display to a user. And then you'd have to pull it out of the screen to save to a database or send off somewhere through like a WCF service. That process of pushing and pulling it in and out of a screen has to be done by somebody. Now, normally we write our own binding controller type classes to do that in WinForms or whatever. MVVM does that through data bindings. That's the first step in MVVM is to deal with the data. But then as you get into it, as you know, as soon as people get into MVVM, they're like, well, wait a minute, what happens when I have commands, when I want to make an action on the screen, take an action a user has done and operate on the data somehow or do some kind of logic? And that's where the bindings still come in, because you can bind an action or an event from a screen, in this case, our XAML page, to a view model. So there's communications that go on between, and there's others. We have things like messages, and we talk about events. But you can talk between the quick key is talking between the view model and the view. All happens through bindings, whether it's data or actions or messages or whatever you might have.
Right. So the only objection I have to what you're saying is that for the first couple of years, an awful lot of Silverlight programmers were doing data binding, but not doing anything like MVVM. They were doing the data binding in the code behind. They were certainly setting up data and binding to that data, but the transition to MVVM was not necessarily automatic and natural. So what's the missing step between when you start doing data binding and when you say, okay, why is it worth it for me to pull this out into a separate class called the view model rather than doing it in this oh-so-convenient code behind class?
So let me give you a couple examples, or maybe just one or two, because there's a lot of reasons to do it. One is, and this is, I almost feel like this is a lazy fallback, so I'll just mention it and move on. Unit testing. If you're into unit testing, it's very difficult to unit test a code behind itself. If you're not into unit testing, you don't care about it, like some people don't, then that's fine. We'll get into that discussion
here.
But
why is that a lazy fallback? I mean, unit testing is a darn good reason to do MVVM.
If you're into it, yes. But there are many, many shops who don't do it.
So I'm not allowed to say that you should be into it.
You can say that if you like.
I would go a step further and say not only is it useful for unit testing, but unit testing is a prerequisite for test-first development. But now I'm out on a very thin limb here.
Exactly. And there's a lot of things that tie into it. And the code behind another thing is, let's say you're starting to write your screens, and for whatever you do first, let's say you've got a code behind and you're using services, some kind of a service that goes and gets your data. Let's say it's going get a list of orders from somewhere or a list of customers. You write that code in your code behind. Now you go to another screen, and you also have to get similar data, different data but similar from the same place, more customer data. So you're now writing the same kind of code to wire up into a WCF service or something else in your code behind. It's very hard for you to replace services, first of all, for testability. So you have some kind of interface in a code behind. It's very hard for you to replace services to, let's say you end up doing this in 10 places. Now you've got 10 different places you've got to write code to talk to your services. You're not hiding what the service is doing from your screens now. So if you want to pull that out into a service that actually handles taking care of getting your data, it's much harder in a code behind. Much easier to do if you do it in like a view model and you use something like injection into the constructor or MEF or, you know, IOC, whatever you want to do. I mean, you don't even have to use any of those actually. But it's
hard
to
people who just pull their eyeballs out. So let's back up a little bit and talk about some of that. Okay, because first thing you were saying, if I followed you correctly, was that there's a refactoring here that allows you to reuse code and that allows you to extract from the code behind that is intimately tied to the view into a more more of an abstraction that you can modify as you wish independent of the view and reuse in various places.
And what we're basically saying is that if you see you're writing the same code over and over again, then you're probably going to want to refactor
that. Now, you then introduced, you know, those great terms, and I love the ability to drop them at parties among geeks, things like dependency injection and IOC. But let's come back to dependency injection. And my experience is that in each new technology, there's one thing that takes a very long time for people to wrap their heads around. So when folks began to adopt C, it was pointers. And when they began to move to C++, it was objects and the whole concept of objects and classes. And as we start talking about MVVM, and certainly when we start talking about things like MEF, which is an extensibility framework, the thing I think that people have a really hard time getting their head around is dependency injection and what that's for and why you care and how it works.
Yeah, I think that's important. And I kind of, when I do talks on this, what I try to explain first is, wouldn't it be great if while you're coding, the way, let's say you're writing some kind of a serialization class, you're not sure if you can use JSON, XML, or the Jesse Liberty serialization class. You don't care. Your code's going to serialize something. Wouldn't it be great if you could just tell your data class, your view model in this case, you could tell it, hey, when you got to go serialize, just use something that's going to implement this interface, in this case, that's going to go and serialize your data. You don't care how it's being done. You just care that it gets done. So with dependency injection, one option you can do is say, all right, let me create an interface. Every serialization class I create is always going to have a go serialize it and then go unserialize it method. Okay, And then you can go, you can write that interface, write your view model up. It doesn't actually run any code yet, but it all works. And then you can go off and write the way you're going to serialize in a JSON class, an XML serialization class. They all implement that interface. But the cool part about it is after you've done that, you've encapsulated, and the reason you're doing it is not because of dependency injection. That's just how you get there. You're doing it as a side effect. But what you're actually doing is you're taking your code and you're saying, I'm making this more reusable. I'm protecting myself in case I want to change how I'm doing it later, because then I can hide the implementation details in the other class. And I'm really just making reusable encapsulated code. It's kind of following, my favorite principle is the single responsibility principle. Every class should have a single function in life. And that's what it's supposed to do.
So we get the reuse, we get the encapsulation. Now just close the loop for us with where dependency injection comes in.
So dependency injection, the way that class, again, we'll just say it's a view model. It doesn't have to be. The view model wants to do that serialization. Instead of creating an instance of the Jesse Liberty serialization class or the JSON serialization class, it actually gets passed in the constructor, in this case, an interface called the iSerialization class. And then in that constructor, it's going to accept one of these real instances, the concrete instances, through the interface, and then it's going to set a local property. So inside your class, all it ever knows is it's got an iSerialization thingy. It never knows how it's actually implemented. And the dependency injection allows you to do that. Now, another side effect of that, which makes it really cool, is when you're doing testing or even design time data and things like Blend or whatever other things you want to do, you can create another concrete serialization class called my fake serialization class. And you can do design time stuff
using
that.
And this
is
what folks generally refer to as a mock.
Yes. Yep. You can create a mock serialization class if you want, and you can pass it into your view model. So it doesn't actually go off and hit any databases or web services or whatever else you might want to be doing in real life. So you can do testing.
See, this is the problem with my job overall, is that I do a lot of mocks and not quite enough reals. And so that's one of the things I'm looking to change by doing the open source projects is, you know, when you're doing demos and you run into a wall, it's very easy to say, well, I'll just do it different. Whereas if you have a real product that you have to deliver, then, okay, let's figure this out. But that, again, I took you off on a tangent. That was a great description of dependency injection. So let me push you a little further and ask you how you get from dependency injection to IOCs and what that has to do with, because people are hearing IOC and MEF in the same sentence a lot, and I'm not sure there's a lot of clarity about those relationships and what they are.
Well, I'll even stop you there, actually, because I don't think it's as important. I think this is a very big thread. Obviously, we started talking about bindings, and MVVM and bindings, and we moved over to dependency injection and testing. I would say for people to grasp all those things first. The IOC part, whether you're using MEF or Unity or Ninjex or any of these other kind of tools that you can use, and there's several others out there, I don't think they're nearly as important to me as understanding and grokking what injection is, you know, with interfaces. The whole concept revolves around understanding what interfaces are for. In this case, you're using interfaces to hide the implementation and to actually use them to be able to flip in and out what you're trying to accomplish. So honestly, I would rather just stay away from the IOC side and say, you know, if you want to use it, great. If you don't, you want to look it up and what it means, go for it. But generally, that's a term I think
sure.
that scares people.
Sure,
but we
could split the difference and just say, at a first approximation, it's a framework that makes, if you're doing a lot of dependency injection, it makes it easier to get that accomplished.
Yes, it does make it easier to accomplish.
But you could certainly go forward without a formal IOC. And if you'll just say what the three letters stand for, I will back off and move back to the where we go.
Okay, it means inversion of control.
Isn't that cool? I love that. Inversion of control. And what's great is it's one of those acronyms that when you explain what it means, you're more confused, not less.
Yes, it's inversion of understanding. One of the reasons I want to stop there is when you get into WP7, which is a topic you know a little bit about.
Windows Phone 7, yes indeed, sir.
There is no MEF, there's no Unity. There are IOC-type tools, but the two most popular that we deal with generally are MEF and Unity, and there are none of those for the phone. And in a lot of ways, I argue that you don't really need them anyway, but I want to break out IOC from DI, from dependency injection, because you can still do dependency injection on Windows Phone without all those other things.
Yes, and there are tools for doing MVVM and making MVVM easier that
yes.
do work with Windows Phone 7.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite on those that you tend to turn to?
So I've used a lot. I've used Caliburn. I've used Prism. I've used Cinch. I think that's how you call it. Always makes me think of the hefty bags. And then I've used MVVM Lite. So what I like to do is I like to use I use the basic pattern without any of those first, and then I supplement with what I need. And I, in the past, have used Prism the most. lately, over the last year and a half, I've been using MVVM Lite the most. And the only reason for it is because there's three things in MVVM Lite I really like. There's a Messenger class, which I think makes message routing, which is really just events, really easy to handle. And I like the way it does it. That's for allowing, and I use messages for two things, and we'll get into that in a minute. It has a really nice commanding structure, and it has really nice behavior for tying events to commands.
Great. And if you can pull those three apart, that's a big service, because I think there's a lot of confusion around that. And we'll cycle back later, if you remind me, to the fact that you're saying that you're adding MVVM Lite later in the process. And my experience with MVVM Lite is it puts a certain amount of infrastructure in, so I'm interested in how you're doing that.
And the reason I've done that is intentional, because people get, no matter what you're putting in, and granted, Laurent Bunyon is the guy who created this, it's no matter what third-party DLL you're putting in there, it's one more thing for people to learn. So even though it's really, really light, I try to start without it so people, when I'm teaching it, understand that you don't need it, but it does. And then when I get to a problem, I say, look, now here's where something would help. Oh, look, here's a DLL that helps do that.
And do you add it to an existing project?
Yes.
You do. Okay. And you find that it integrates itself into that project okay, with no problem.
Yeah, because there's a couple things it does for you. Like it's got some snippets, which is nice. But the big things are really the messenger and the event-to-command behavior, which I really like. There's this thing called a view model locator, which helps you bind your view to your view model. I actually implement my own version, so I don't use the MVVM Lite one. You know, and I'm actually having a meeting with Laurent in a week or two to discuss some options and how we could both better our own ways of doing that. But that's one thing I do. The commanding side is nice that he's got built into. So there's some things that you can use, but it's again, these frameworks are helpers. They're not essential.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about those three things. Not so much, I mean, we can use MVVM Lite as the starting point, but let's talk about what they're accomplishing, this issue of commands and events and behaviors, because this is the place, I think, where the wheels fall off the bus for a lot of folks about how do I get that I can move the logic and the binding into view model, but then what do I do when I need to execute some code based on something that happens in the view?
We're talking about nouns and verbs here. All of our applications have nouns and verbs. Our nouns are our data. That's the things we're pushing between the data and the view model. The view model and the view. And our verbs, that's where it gets a little more complicated. Everybody seems to grok that I can bind my screen to my data. But the verbs are a little more complicated. That's where you get into, somebody clicks a button. How do I respond to that in the view model? Let's say it gets a little more complicated. Let's say something happens in the view model now, and I want to fire off an animation in the view. How do I communicate back up? So there's different actions, verbs that have to happen. And that's where commands and this event-to-command behavior I mentioned, and also the messenger class that's in MVVM Lite, which I just call messages. They're events. Come into play. Events basically allow you to talk from the view model to something else, either another view model or the view, and your commands and your behaviors allow you to talk from the view to the view model, doing an action as opposed to a pushing of data.
And so why are there two of those?
That is a source of continual frustration amongst many of us. Commands are basically, there's an iCommand interface inside of Silverlight and WPF, and basically, looking at the lowest common denominator, a command allows you to take a button class or anything that derives from button base and respond to that click event inside your view model. Where it stops short is it does not help you handle, let's say, row selection in a list box.
Right, selection, changed event, any of those events.
Any other thing that doesn't derive from button base, basically. And that's where event to command helps.
No, that's not where command helps.
That's where event to command helps, the behavior.
Right. So do you go ahead and use buttons command behavior, or do you just put everything into the single approach and that works with everything?
I mean the behaviors, because behaviors will do everything
right.
for you.
Since a behavior will work with both a button and anything else, you could dispense with commands altogether and just use behaviors.
You could. You could just use behaviors, and I don't see anything wrong with that approach, to be honest with you, but I generally, if it's a button, I use commands. If it implements the iCommand interface, I use it. And part of that is because I think I feel better about the way the commands work than the behaviors. Plus, it's a little bit less XAML. I mean, you're getting to the purist mode. And this is less, you know, it's right or wrong.
Right. The place where
style.
I think we may have caused a little bit of confusion is we're saying that command is supported by button, and we're saying that behavior is imposed from either you're writing it yourself or using a framework to add that to other kinds of events, such as a row change. But then we introduced event to command.
Yes, event to command is one specific behavior. that's an NVVM.
So there are
light,
other ways of getting commanding done. I'm sorry, of getting behaviors
without using NVVM.
Without using that, if you're not using that framework, for example, Blend offers, if you're willing to bring in the Blend part of the Blend DLL, there's a behavior structure.
Mm-hmm. Right, there's one that calls a method.
Okay, so if you're going to tackle doing MVVM, what you're looking at is first getting your head around the whole idea. Then binding is already in place, and you're probably comfortable with it by the time you're starting down this path. And the next question is going to be commands and behaviors. Commands you're getting built into Silverlight, and it's behaviors where you have to either write your own or pick up a framework to make that easy for you.
Yeah, and the behaviors, I mean, for people who are scared about it, I mean, that's very clear, but people who might be scared about behaviors, they basically drag it onto the platform or write, it's like three lines of XAML.
I'm going to take you down a side path for a second, because you said something that I think is an extraordinary thing, which is we are all good friends. And I mean that more than just work acquaintances. These are people who I've come to think of as friends. A lot of the MVPs, we see each other at conferences. We interact with each other ostensibly around the profession. But in fact, I think a community has been created around Silverlight in just a couple of years that is, in some ways, I think, unusual.
I agree. It's one of the best parts about our job, I think, is, you know, you and I became friends, I don't know, a couple of years ago now.
Now, with you, it's just a business acquaintance, but okay.
Man. But it is really, really awesome. And we, you know, we've got this community of people, and not just the MVPs, but there's other people involved in Silverlight. Guys like Sean Wildermuth, who's an MVP, but not in Silverlight. There's other people as well. And we all kind of hang out. We all collaborate. We all get along. I mean, geez, I've had several of you at my house when you've come up to Redmond at times and tried to poison you with barbecue. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's extraordinary, you know, that you hang out with the people that you work with virtually. And virtually, because, you know, we're 3,000 miles apart. But it's fun, and it makes it great. And that's why I like the patterns that I do and the practices that I do, because I know they're not just vetted by me and my customers that I've worked with, but they're also vetted by several other industry professionals. And I get feedback from all you guys, and we all collaborate. I agree. It's really, really fun to be in this community.